Let me ask you something. What if there was someone out there who kept a log of every single thing you did every minute of the day? That would probably creep you out. Well, that's exactly what happens every time you go online. Your internet provider stores logs of every website you've ever visited and can legally sell this data to anyone. Worse yet, the government can obtain your data via bulk FISA order even if you're not personally suspected of any crime. That's why I use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN reroutes your internet connection through their secure servers so your internet provider can't see or log what you do online. Visit expressvpn.com/Mullen right now and find out how you can get 3 months for free. That's expressvpn.com/Mullen. Protect your data and get 3 months for free today.
Every revolution starts in the minds of the people. Arm yourself for the war of ideas. Take back your life. Take back your liberty. Tom Mullen talks freedom.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Tom Mullen Talks Freedom. Today, my guest is Dr. Naomi Wolf. She's been on the show before, and you may remember from her excellent book, The Bodies of Others. She's a best-selling author of not only that book, but many more, including The Beauty Myth and Give Me Liberty, A Handbook for American Revolutionaries, and several others. She's also the co-founder and CEO of Daily Clout, which we'll talk about in a minute. But I wanted to get Naomi back on the show because, Naomi, there was an article that you wrote called Broken in What Way that I have to tell you just hit such a chord with me. I kind of felt like it's something I've talked about here, that since 2020, everything does seem to be broken. And it's been my own personal experience with my own town. You can see behind me is Buffalo, New York. Although I've spent a lot of time in New York City, and I haven't been there much, only to Long Island since 2020. But maybe you could just talk a little bit about what you were saying in this article. You say that the city seems different. It seems broken. Just elaborate on that a little bit.
Sure. And thanks again for having me back on. Well, my readers will know that I have been kind of documenting the collapse of our civilization since 2020 and the sort of mirror imaging of all of our institutions from having been based on kind of, even though we're a secular society, based on kind of values in the Ten Commandments, values in the Judeo-Christian tradition, into their mirror opposite, you know, straight up evil. So hospitals used to save lives. Now they administer remdesivir to elderly people and euthanize them. Schools used to be protective of children. You know, for 2 years, kids were masked and isolated and bullied and treated like second-class citizens if they didn't comply in certain ways. You know, journalists used to pursue the truth, and then they took money and propagated lies that are killing people. And so people know that I wrote a book called, or many people know that I wrote a book called The Bodies of Others in 2021. And my most recent book, Facing the Beast, is kind of a sequel. And then this essay, Broken in What Way, is sort of a sequel to the sequel. It's like life in the post-collapse dark age world that we're in now. So Broken in What Way describes my return to Brooklyn and to my circles and to Harlem, places that I used to spend time in, where I have a lot of friends, had a lot of friends in the before times. And it just kind of narrates how this collapse, this pandemic, which people who follow me know, I think have proven is completely artificial. The data were artificial. The metrics were artificial. I mean, not that COVID isn't a real disease, but we can never know how damaging it was because the data sets were confidential. And so many things were wrong, like the PCR tests were falsified and so on. But going back to New York and specifically Brooklyn and Harlem, this once thriving, vibrant city, full of optimism, full of small businesses, full of little ethnic restaurants, was broken, you know, and broken in many ways. And people who live there day to day don't seem to register the brokenness. Like, the title comes from a friend of mine where I said, wow, Harlem seems broken. And he said, he's an intelligent guy. And he said, broken in what way? Like, he didn't notice, he didn't see it. But everything from just graffiti and the unity of Americans from whatever background and nation originally speaking English or trying to speak English, that was shattered, you know, into a million different languages where no one even cares anymore if they communicate to anyone else, you know, outside their immediate language circle. The influx of illegal immigrants, and again, I'm the daughter and granddaughter of immigrants, so it's not a racial thing or even a legal immigrant thing. It's a millions of criminals violating our laws and kind of shattering, you know, it's this globalist plan to shatter our culture and our local cultures by just throwing humans at, you know, at our local cultures. And that's happening in New York, New York City, and around the world. Due to the lockdowns of the middle class, you know, of small businesses, small restaurants. And I wrote about this in The Bodies of Others, the money flow that to big tech and big, you know, Amazon and Walmart by closing down forcibly these small businesses, small restaurants, not allowing people to congregate, BlackRock scooping up the real estate, and the drug addiction, the madness, the despair. I mean, it was just absolutely devastating, and even more devastating that people couldn't process that this beautiful city that has been like the emblem of American melting pot and creativity and dynamism and commerce just has kind of given up on itself. That was the theme of the essay.
Yeah, you said something that also strikes a chord. It's that I felt the same way about my own city and about society in general, and thought, well, nobody else seems to notice this, or, you know, they look at COVID, oh boy, that was really terrible, and now it's over, and it's almost like they're not, I don't know, but nothing feels the same anymore. My own personal experience was that I lived in Buffalo most of my life. I moved to Florida in 2004 and lived there for 10 years near Tampa. And I had to come back for family reasons, had elderly parents and still have one that's have dementia and that, those kinds of things. So I had to come back. But when I got back, to be honest with you, I was glad to be back, even with the snow and, you know, all the taxes. that was not a surprise, but it's still a jolt the first year you file when you get back to New York. You know, the culture, I was home and it felt just like home. And really the first 4.5 years were great. I moved back here in 2014, I guess the first 5.5 years. And since then, nothing seems the same. One of the things I noticed, because I traveled quite extensively, and you could tell me if this is the same thing in New York. God, I hope not. The city that never sleeps. When I was traveling in Europe, everything was closed after 7 o'clock, or a lot of things were. Like, I was used to things, you know, stores, restaurants, whatever, being open till late into the evening. And now it feels more like Europe. And I don't know what New York City's like. Is there just less to do? Are stores closing? Are there not as many restaurants to go to at 10:30 at night if you get hungry?
I wouldn't say I noticed that, although the ebullience is definitely dialed down. Like, you know, I notice little things like we used to live in the West Village, and it became kind of intolerable because Thursday and Friday night, there would be these huge gangs of young people looking to, you know, go to the bars and hook up and, you know, get drunk or high. And so there would be crowds of young people making insane rackets, you know, under your windows. And I, you know, like a kind of old fogey, I'd be like, oh, you know, we've got to get some sleep. Well, I really miss that now because you don't hear that anymore. You know, you don't hear like teenagers carousing and young adults carousing and shrieking and guffawing with laughter and singing. You don't hear that. I mean, when's the last time you heard that, right? I mean, maybe Florida is different if you still go down there, but New York, you just don't hear it anymore. And it could be, you know, what, trauma? It could be the trauma plus people being conditioned to be on their phones all the time, which is a definite change that I see. But you don't see that exuberance. You don't see couples kissing. I mean, I've written about the mRNA injections and how they've been known for 10 years to suppress libido as well as sexual expression and reproductive health. Well, you just don't see couples, you know, sitting on park benches making out anymore. And you used to see that, you know, people going closely arm in arm, you know, hugging and kissing. You just don't see that anymore. You don't see babies being nursed. You don't see heavily pregnant women. You see slightly pregnant women. I've written about how the mRNA injections are keeping women from bringing their babies to term. They're delivering their babies prematurely. That's definitely a change. But I mean, there are still clubs. There are still bars. It's just a much more subdued vibe. You know, it's... And yet the other thing, I wrote a separate essay called Among the Rich. In New York, there used to be, like, before I was ejected from my former life in 2021 for writing accurately about damage to women's reproductive health from the mRNA injections, I was a member of the liberal elite in the media. And that meant that I was invited into a lot of fancy events and interiors, right? A lot of wealthy people, a lot of socialites, a lot of industry leaders, and so on. I'm not showing off. I'm just describing anthropologically what, you know, I used to witness. Sure. Well, I got struck from those lists, right? As you know, probably for telling the truth, as I mentioned, and also for talking to Republicans, which you're not allowed to do. But now I'm interestingly back on some lists, which to me suggests that they know that Trump is going to win in the fall. I mean, that's just an aside. Point is, in New York, there used to be society, like until 2020, there were masters of the universe. You know, Tom Wolfe wrote about that. There were socialites trying to outdress each other. There was, you know, moguls being competitive. People were showing off their wealth in, you know, interiors, you know, showing off their accomplishments, talking about their yachts or their kids getting into Harvard. All of that is gone now. I mean, it's kind of heartbreaking. Like, on the one hand, you sort of think, well, so what? Rich people are not showing off as much. But it's also kind of tragic because there are still rich people, but they almost are scared. They've lost confidence. And the women literally wear, you know, sweatpants and flats to everything. The women who were wearing the most extraordinary confections, like there's no more fashion. There's no more, you know, expensive haircuts. You know, there's like everyone's just kind of given up and they're in their sweatpants. And the men, you know, they don't even bother competing with each other anymore. They don't bother showing off. They're just very subdued. And I guess it's kind of telling, I mean, I guess what I'm trying to say is every society has a leadership, right? If it's a healthy society, they may or may not be the best people in the world, but you need a leadership structure in which people believe in the culture. Well, the wealthy people at the top no longer believe in themselves or in the culture. And you can feel that, like, just the word, like collapse of conviction. And, you know, why? I think they know they were taken in. I think they're scared. I think they're scared they're going to die or get disabled. I think they, you know, I mean, rich people aren't stupid. And I think that even though no one's talking about the mRNA injections and they don't want me to talk about them, word has gotten out and they feel suckered. You know, they're supposed to be the smartest people on earth and they fell for something that's going to kill them or kill their children or grandchildren or damage them or harm them. Anyway, it was very sad. And I miss that sense of aspiration you used to have, you know, whether you respected the people at the top, it was, you know, we were all part of a city where everyone was racing to get somewhere. And that just has vanished.
Are people wearing masks in New York? Do you see a lot of it? Is it a large percentage or no?
I wouldn't say it's more than in other crazy places. I think think there's probably more in Boston, at the Chicago airport, I see people in masks. I wouldn't say it's more, but there are still crazy people in masks. Yeah.
So here's a really weird thing about Western New York, that Erie County that has Buffalo is very Democratic Party voting, and all the other counties around it are semi-rural or rural, and they're all Republican voting. And I live in Niagara County, and I have a business interest in Erie County. So I spend a lot of time in Erie County, and it's like the mask thing is like night and day. I mean, I forgot all about it until I started going back to Erie County last year. And honestly, I don't know. I'll just put a number. 40% of the people I see going in and out of this retail place are wearing a mask this week in April. And
are
I don't
you
feel
serious?
I've
never heard of that. That's bad.
A lot. And I don't feel anger towards these people. I feel like they've been damaged. And that's another thing that I was reading your article that didn't really dwell on that part of it. It's almost like, everybody's been dinged. It's funny that you say the so-called elites have also kind of, it's like a defeated attitude. And I don't know how to get out of it, how we're going to get out of it.
Well, you're bringing up something very profound. And in my book, Facing the Beast, which is a collection of essays about this time, I do talk about that damage, right? It is trauma. I mean, we were collectively traumatized. And I talk about the difference between Florida, actually, and New York, right? And sort of the rest of the world outside the freedom states, and how in Florida, there was still, at least when I went to visit, this sense of how America used to feel, you know, that we were not broken, right? Not traumatized, you know, people, there was still this continuity socially, and this layering of social relationships that hadn't been disrupted, and this hopefulness of this freedom. And in the whole rest of the country, people witnessed, I've studied violence in war, and especially violence against women in war, right? And violence against children. And the reason that perpetrators engage in public violence against women and children is to shame the men kind of permanently with the fact that they couldn't protect their families, right? Well, that happened to all of us, right? Everyone who couldn't save their child from an injection to go back to college, or who couldn't save their wife from an injection to keep her job, or who couldn't save themselves from an injection to, you know, keep food on the table. They were broken, you know, for themselves and for their families. They were shamed. We were shamed. You know, I write about, it's an essay called A Lost Small Town, in which, you know, I'm not vaccinated, thank God, but in 2021, literally every store I went to in this picture perfect small town in my area called Millerton, I would be asked, it was a script, are you vaccinated? Like literally to go into the florist to buy flowers, you know, to go to the movie theater, are you vaccinated? And it's like intentionally invasive and intrusive and very much like, you know, very much like sexual violence in the sense of it's a breaking of your boundaries. You know, it's a demand for kind of exposure of a very personal thing that you don't want, that's no one else's business, basically. And so in that respect, I recognized it as an assault survivor. I recognized how traumatic it is to have strangers all day long asking you this very, you know, demanding this very personal information about your body, right? So that was traumatizing to everybody, not just to me, you know, whether we acknowledge it or not. That was a trauma that everyone thought, the authorities thought they could strip you bare, essentially, and track you. And, you know, and it was traumatic. I mean, I've written about this too, to go into New York City, the place where everyone cool is so inclusive and non-discriminatory and would never discriminate against gay people or Black people. Overnight, those same people, my former friends and colleagues, accepted and embraced a discrimination society that was exactly like Jim Crow pre-1964. Exactly. So you can go into this restaurant, you, Naomi, have to eat in the street like an animal. Yeah. You know, you can go into this gym, you can't go into this gym. I mean, I literally wasn't allowed to sit at a lunch counter in my fancy hotel because I I wasn't vaccinated. And they literally, I literally texted my lawyer to get ready for me to be arrested because I was not leaving the lunch counter at my hotel. But like, how do we not remember, you know, the lunch counter in our history, right? So I guess what I'm saying is I agree with you that those people in masks have had a very elaborate, permanent psychological operation of trauma inflicted on them. And actually, there's a really interesting book by Dr. Michael Nels, who's a German neuroscientist, who explains that all these measures do rewire the brain, sometimes permanently, and create a certain kind of binary thinking that people can't get out of.
You know, the first time I ever heard you speak was back in the 2000s, and this was 2008. So we were still in the war on terror phase. And I was a non-political person as far as I knew up until right around 2000. And I was actually told by a coworker, "Oh, you're a libertarian." I said, "I am," because it was when the Bush-Gore election dispute was going on. And, you know, I think it was at the point where it was at the courts and everybody was weighing in with their opinions, and they would ask mine and I would just say, "Well, this is what I think." And my impression of you, we actually spoke at a Ron Paul event. You probably don't remember this, but it was 2008.
I do. That was a wonderful event.
Washington, D.C. Yeah. And I had never done anything like that before. And then I heard the other speakers. I heard you and I thought, well, she's like a liberal that I like because she likes the Bill of Rights and, you know, that kind of thing. So it's, I mean, I think someone would read your article here and say that there's a lot of conservatism in it. The concern that tradition, culture, the continuity of what was there before has been broken down. How would you respond to that, or how would you describe yourself these days? Still the same, and the rest of the world's gone crazy, or have you started to move in some direction or the other?
Right, great question. Well, I do feel like I have been completely consistent my whole career, and that the world has changed around me. I mean, I do feel that. You know, like I was a media darling for 35 years. For caring about women's reproductive and sexual health. And then, you know, I was an outcast in 2021 for caring about women's sexual and reproductive health. So that doesn't make sense. And I've always cared about the Constitution and, you know, human rights and the freedom of the individual. That used to be in common with, you know, everybody, right? Not just conservatives. That used to be an American value. And now, weirdly, just conservatives care about freedom of the individual and freedom of speech and human rights. So, you know, things have gone crazy. But I don't really believe in labels. That said, in my book, Facing the Beast, and in my Substack essays, I do acknowledge that, I mean, one of my essays is called Dear Conservatives, I Apologize. And I do acknowledge that I believed a lot of things that were nonsensical, you know, that were wrong, that I apologize for. And some of my views have shifted, like First Amendment. I think we're in a time where everyone needs, you know, thank God for the, I'm sorry, Second Amendment. Thank God for the Second Amendment. And you know, everyone needs to learn to shoot. And you know, it's only because of the Second Amendment that we're not Australia and Canada.
I guess the last thing I'll say, and I want you to talk a little bit about Daily Clout and just tell people what it's doing. But Trump, let's just say he wins the election and the Republicans keep one of the houses, the House, I guess. The thing that bothers me is that all this happened while he was president. So are you hopeful that something would be different this time? If he were to, I mean, he didn't mandate any vaccines there. I don't think he had a chance to, and I don't know that he would, cause he's been against that. What are your thoughts if he wins? Does this help or do we need something else?
Right. Well, you know, disclosure, because I run a nonpartisan news site devoted to empowering everyone to use legislation, I try not to endorse. That said, I think it's okay to acknowledge that the Biden administration is a criminal captured administration. And, you know, they're not normal Democrats. They're traitors. So I do think, you know, without endorsing, I do think any anti-globalist, nationalist, constitutionalist candidate is better than the kind of globalist World Economic Forum, China-based opposition, which we see around the world, not just in the United States. I mean, opposition to us, opposition to the American people and people around the world. So I don't want to endorse, but I do think of the two, I think a dream ticket would have been Trump, RFK Jr., honestly. And I really am sorry that does not look like it's in the cards. Mm-hmm. But, you know, without endorsing, I'll say any anti-globalist candidate will be better. And that, you know, Trump is kind of a weird figure in human history or American history because he is so rich. I mean, not anymore, but he is so rich that he really can be a wrench in the gears of the bad plans they have for all of us. But that's, I mean, I always warn people, don't expect, there is no knight on, you know, in shining armor. Like yeah. No one can rescue you. And you have to rescue yourself. And that's why we're so excited about Legisector, which is our new platform we rolled out where you can pass your own bills, pass your own laws, and, you know, not wait for some mythical party to save you, because no mythical party is going to save you. They're equally horrible.
Amen to that. Tell us just a little bit about Daily Clout and this new website before you have to run.
Sure. Thank you so much. So Daily Clout is our news and opinion site. And it also houses the Pfizer documents reports, which are the nearly 100 reports that our 3,250 doctors and scientists have produced based on the 450,000 Pfizer documents released under court order. And these are documents that the FDA asked the court to keep hidden for 75 years. So as I think I may have mentioned, they document the greatest crime in human history. And forgive me if I'm like, I've been talking all day. So forgive me if I repeated that a bit, but it's very important for your listeners to know. So those are all free on Daily Clout. Just click the upper right-hand corner. And we also have an election integrity bill. I mentioned that our mission is to empower people through giving them the ability to draft and pass their own legislation. So it's this awesome bill. It's a model bill to clean up the elections. And legislators are saying it'll solve the problems, the main problems. So we have movement in 5 states, but everyone send the model bill to your state rep. I will get myself to any state house on my own funds to lobby for it if you can get your state rep to invite me and hopefully pass that bill before November, God willing. And then legisector.com is our newest it's our newest platform, and it's linked. Actually, it's not linked to Daily Clout. You would have to do www.legisector.com because Google is suppressing it already because it's so revolutionary. But you can see any bill, state or federal bill, in your sector or on the homepage in any sector. And you can, you know, sign up for a dedicated portal to your area of interest and see live legislation, tweet the bill sponsor, tweet your rep, contact the bill sponsor, you know, start or stop bills that affect you and use it, you know, to invest, to know what's coming down the line, to, for journalists, it's fabulous for the news cycle. It's an amazing tool.
Well, great. We'll link to both of those on the show notes page. And appreciate everything you're doing, Naomi. A lot of libertarians like John Tyler, because he got kicked out of his own party for vetoing bills. So the fact that you got kicked out of polite society for a while puts you in good company. Keep doing that. I'm glad to hear you're getting some invites back, and hope you'll be able to come back again.
Thank you so much. I'll have to look into John Tyler. That sounds awesome. I guess I am in good company. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye. All right, friends, that's going to do it for today. Just a few reminders to stop by TomMullenTalksFreedom.com/support and check out all the ways that you can support my efforts here, including joining my Patreon or my Substack. And if you haven't already, make sure that you go to itsthefedstupid.com to download a copy of my free ebook, It's the Fed Stupid. And as always, if you like the music you've heard here on Tom Mullen Talks Freedom, you can hear more at tommullensings.com. Thanks for listening.
The War of Ideas has only just begun. Arm yourself with the knowledge you need by heading to TomMullenTalksFreedom.com and subscribing to our email list. And remember, every revolution starts in the minds of the people.